We can expect that decks will be patrolled by guards, and a grappling hook would be easy to see. You would run a high risk of being discovered and shot before you even climbed to the deck. Dodds was starting to annoy me. So you've told us why none of our ideas would work. What's your plan?
Unfortunately, I don't have one, Dodds said. The Electro Clan has continually succeeded where we have failed. We were hoping you would come up with something.
You said the hull is made of steel? McKenna asked.
Yes, Dodds replied.
We don't need a grappling hook. Michael could magnetically climb it, the way Kylie does.
I looked at her. I've never done anything like that before. You did in the Star Source plant, Jack said, when the rats were chasing us. You could carry the rope up, tie it, then throw it down. Then I'll climb up, and we'll pull up everyone else.
It would have to be at night, Jaime said, or else the other boats in the fleet would see you.
That could work, Dodd said, looking at me. What do you think? Could you climb it? I'll need to practice, I said, and my knot tying. I haven't tied anything since Cub Scouts.
I can arrange both, Jaime said.
The next question is, how do we get around to the back of the boat without being seen?
Scuba, Austin said.
Scuba? Taylor said. What if there are sharks?
Sharks rarely attack humans, Austin said. Besides, there are much worse things than sharks on the Ampere.
Like Hatch, I said. I looked at Taylor. I say we keep scuba as one of the options.
If we're already diving, Jack said, why don't we just put the explosives under the boat and blow it out of the water?
The Ampere has a reinforced hull and is shaped to deflect a hull explosion. Also, the ship's sonar will detect anything directly under the boat more than 4 feet in length. They would have divers down after you in seconds.
If this was a suicide mission, it wouldn't matter, Jack said.
Everyone went quiet. I looked at Jack. But it's not, I said. Jack just looked ahead with dark eyes.
But it would work.
Not necessarily, Dodd said. As I said, the hull is shaped to deflect an explosion. Think of it this way. If you grasp a firecracker in your hand, it will blow up your hand. If you set it flat on your palm, it will hurt, but it won't do much damage. That's the difference between putting the explosive inside the boat as opposed to outside of it.
Then we'll get more dynamite, Jack said.
We're not using dynamite, Dodd said. We'll be using a much more stable water gel explosive. But either way, one person could not carry enough to sink the Ampere from the outside. In fact, all of you together couldn't carry enough.
Then we'll fill a boat with explosives and ram it, Jack said.
That would fall under the whole suicide mission thing, I said. No one else said a word. Jack's comment had left everyone speechless. After a moment, Dodd said, "Let's move on. As difficult as boarding will be, it is only the beginning. The Ampere is just as protected on board as it is overboard. The Elgen are exacting about their security. It is rumored that the Ampere has anti-photograph lasers that sweep the boat's surroundings for cameras. When it detects a CCD, they shine a laser into the camera's lens to prevent a photograph from being taken.
What's a CCD? Taylor asked.
It's a charge-coupled device, Austin said. In a CCD image sensor, pixels are...
I stopped him. It's something in a camera, I said.
Then how did you get this photograph? Taylor asked.
Dodd smiled.
Very carefully.
He looked back down at the blueprint. In addition, the boat is equipped with a ship-wide camera surveillance system, an intruder detection system, armor-plated doors, and bulletproof windows. We aren't certain how the intruder detection system works,
but we suspect that, with all the deck activity during loading, the system will be turned off. But the surveillance cameras will still be a problem.
Zeus was good with those, Austin said. He'd just blow them out.
That's not helpful, I said.
We could make a distraction, McKenna said. We could blow up something like we did in Pokartambo.
No, Dodd said, shaking his head. At best, it would only distract them for a few minutes. And if something unexpected happens, the Elgen will go on heightened alert. They'll pull in like a threatened turtle. Then we'll need to look like them, I said. Like we did in the Star Source plant.
How do we get Elgen uniforms? Taylor asked.
We could steal them, Jack said.
No, Dodd said. That would be another red flag. The Elgen are very strict about missing uniforms. They are like the owner of a burger joint who counts the cups each night to make sure his employees aren't giving away free drinks to their friends.
My friend Sarah used to do that, Taylor whispered to me.
But we could take one, Jaime said. That wouldn't cause any suspicion. The Elgen sailors often go AWOL.
What good is one? Taylor asked. There are five of us.
We take one, and we copy it, Jaime said. We can make them close enough that they will not notice the difference.
Do we have time for that? Jack asked.
My people could make five uniforms in one day. The boss will be in port at least 3 days.
What if no one leaves the boat? Austin asked.
The sailors have been at sea for many weeks. Trust me, they will come ashore, Jaime said. Leave it to me.
So, we will duplicate the uniforms, Dodd said, but we'll need black cover-ups to go over them as you climb onto the ship.
So we make a black cloak, too, Jaime said. Simple.
Okay, one more thing, Dodd said. All the exterior doors and some of the interior doors on the Ampere are locked with magnetic switches.
This just keeps getting better, McKenna said. Then how do we get through them? Taylor asked.
You will have to find a key, Dodd said. This probably won't be too difficult, as every crew member will have one. You can take one from a guard, or perhaps when you get the uniform.
No problem, Jaime said. We will take the key with the uniform.
Dodd looked back down at the blueprints and touched a spot near the boat's stern.
This is where you will climb up. Once you're all on board, you will gather here, at this door, which opens to a staircase. From what we know, this back staircase is a fire escape and is rarely used, usually only in the case of an emergency. It leads to all levels, including level 1. It is very narrow, so you will have to travel in single file. At the bottom of the stairwell, you will move forward approximately 30 yards to the engine room.
How will we know if we're going the right way? Taylor asked.
You're already at the back of the boat, so there is no other way to go. Also, you will hear the Ampere's engines long before you reach the engine room. The crew wears earplugs. This could be a problem in the hallway, as you will have difficulty communicating with one another because of the noise.
Even when the boat's docked? I asked.
The captain will usually keep at least one engine idling to keep it from drifting and to charge the batteries.
He looked up again.
You must remember, the engine room will not be unmanned. Even at night, there will be 6 to 10 crewmen. They will probably be unarmed, but do not count on it. You will have to take out the crew, set the explosive and timer, then escape the ship before it explodes. It's that simple.
Simple? I said.
Sorry, Dodd replied. In concept, it's simple. In practice, it will be very challenging.
By challenging, do you mean hopelessly impossible? Taylor said.
He shook his head sympathetically.
Hopefully not impossible.
He looked around at us.
but from what I've seen, this group seems to specialize in the impossible. Are there any questions?
No one spoke for a moment. Then Austin said,
Yeah. Is it too late to back out?
Chapter 33 Silo Practice. That evening, Jaime and I drove out to the country, looking for a place for me to practice climbing.
There, he said. I thought I remembered seeing that.
He pointed out over the fence to a tall cylindrical structure.
It is a grain silo. It is made of steel.
When we were certain that no one was around, we climbed over a barbed wire fence to the farm, then walked 50 yards to the base of the silo. Do you know whose farm this is? I asked. Jaime shook his head.
No.
Will anyone see us? I asked.
I hope not. You climb. I will keep lookout.
The silo was made of ribbed galvanized steel and rose about 40 feet high, the top tapering off to a cone. The best way to describe what it's like magnetizing myself is to say it's like pulsing inside my body instead of outside of it, a little like stifling a sneeze. I reached my hand as high above me as I could, then pulsed. My hand stuck firmly to the cool metal. Then, pulsing my legs, I jumped up with my knees against the silo. Both my knees stuck. For a moment, I just sat there, stuck in place. As Jack had said, I had climbed the wall at the Star Source plant, but it was really just hanging on. Actually climbing upward involved more than just sticking to the metal, but a carefully timed process of sticking, releasing, then re-sticking. It took me 10 minutes to climb just 10 feet. At this rate, it would take me an hour to climb the Ampere, far too long to hang on to the side of the boat without being seen. After some experimenting, I developed a rhythm, shifting my magnetism from one side of my body to the other. About 20 feet up, I accidentally released one side before fully magnetizing the other, and fell about 5 feet before, in panic, I magnetized my entire body and stuck to the side of the silo like a magnet on a refrigerator door. I climbed to the top of the silo and back down again in about a half hour, which wasn't too bad, considering that the first 20 minutes I was still figuring out what I was doing. When I got down, I was covered with sweat and panting. I leaned over on my knees to catch my breath.
Let's try again, Jaime said.
I looked up.
What? Not fast enough. This time I will time you. On your mark, get set, go.
I jumped up and began climbing. It reminded me of the time in 7th grade gym class when we had to climb the rope to the ceiling. I didn't set any gym records, but at least I had made it to the top. This brought to mind another problem. Austin, who was not only out of shape but also afraid of heights, made it only a third of the way before he gave up and slid down, which gave him a wicked rope burn on his thighs and arms. His mother called the school the next day and gave the gym teacher an earful. After all we'd been through, Austin was in better shape than he was back then, but I still wondered if he could do it. I reached the top of the silo, then slid back down in a controlled slide. I dropped the last 6 feet to the ground, rolling on the grass below.
How'd I do?
Jaime nodded.
Very good. You made it to the top in 4 minutes. If you can keep this fast, you will climb the side of the boat in less than 15 minutes.
Except I'll be wearing an LGEN uniform and cloak, I said.
Yes, and carrying a heavy rope, Jaime added.
I didn't think about that, I said. I better practice with the rope.
I will purchase one tomorrow, Jaime said. We will come back tomorrow.
On the drive back to the villa, I said, Any word on my mother? Jaime shook his head.
It is very strange, he said. The voice is not responding to our signal.
What does that mean? I asked.
I don't know, but I will keep trying.
After a few more minutes, he said,
I am worried about our friend Jack.
So am I said. He hasn't been the same since we lost Wade. He blames himself for Wade's death.
That is bad, Jaime said.
Taylor told me that she read his mind and he's not expecting to survive the attack. It's like he's just accepted this is going to be a suicide mission.
Jaime nodded slowly.
Perhaps that is his wish.
That's what I'm afraid of. I frowned. I don't know what to do when someone loses hope.
You pray for them, my friend. You pray for them.
We were quiet the rest of the ride home. Chapter 34. Yachts and Fishing Boats. I'm not sure why Jaime didn't just stay at the villa with us, but he didn't. He usually just showed up when we needed him, like for my climbing practices. The next day we found an abandoned metal storage shed closer to the house. I went there twice a day until I got my time down to just 12 minutes. Taylor started coming with me to watch, or maybe just to feel like a cheerleader again. She was good at that. She even made up a cheer.
Go, Michael! Climb that wall! Reach the top, and please don't fall! Go, Michael!
Then she'd do this little kick thing. Jaime just looked at her like she was crazy. Truthfully, her cheering was counterproductive. The first time she did the whole cheer, I started laughing so hard that I fell 10 feet. The next 3 days were an emotional roller coaster for me. At one moment, I imagined us sinking the boat, escaping, and flying home, having saved the country of Tuvalu, wherever that was. The next moment, the whole thing looked like a suicide mission. On the morning of the 3rd day, Jaime came in while we were all eating breakfast. Taylor had made French toast and fried Peruvian bacon, which was so thick it looked like ham.
You're early, I said. I thought we were going at 11.
Get something to eat, Taylor said. Help yourself, I made a ton.
Jaime looked at us seriously. The Elgin fleet is in port. We all stopped eating.
All of them?
Austin asked. Si.
I want to see it, I said.
You will soon enough, Jaime said. When we attack.
I need to see it before then. I need to see it in daylight.
That is risky.
Unlike sneaking aboard and sinking it, Austin said.
I have to see it, I said firmly. I need to know what I'm facing. I need to visualize the attack.
Jaime looked unsure.
I will have to see if Dodds can come.
We don't need Dodds, I said. I just want to see the boats for myself.
Me too,
Jack said.
And me, Taylor said.
Jaime looked at us for a moment, then said,
Very well. I must make arrangements to capture our sailor's uniform. Then I will be back.
Don't forget his magnetic key, Austin added.
Si, and the key. Then we will go visit the Elgin.
Jaime returned to the house around 5 in the afternoon. All 5 of us were waiting for him in the front room and walked out to meet him before he reached the front door. When we were in the van, Taylor said,
Jaime, did you set your sailor trap?
Si, señorita.
What are you using for bait? She asked.
A pretty woman, of course.
Then he added,
It works every time.
Worked for me,
Austin said, looking over at McKenna. She smiled at him.
Wow,
Taylor whispered to me.
Just wow.
Jaime drove north up the Pacific coastline about 20 miles before we came to a solitary cliff overlooking the Port Callao harbor. We reached the port after the sun had been making its descent, turning the bay a hue of golden rose. After Jaime was completely certain that we were not being watched, he retrieved a pair of binoculars from beneath the van's driver's seat, and we walked out to the edge of the cliff and got down on our stomachs. The Callao Bay stretched out below us, bustling with barges and cranes, navy ships, yachts, freighters, and cruise liners.
"That's a lot bigger than I thought it would be," Taylor said.
"Port Callao is the largest seaport in South America," Jaime said.
"What does Callao mean?" Austin asked.
Jaime looked at him.
"This you do not know?"
"Nope," he said.
Jaime nodded.
"Neither does anyone else."
He pointed to a group of ships a few hundred yards north of us.
"They are all there, all together," he said,
handing me his binoculars. Even without the binoculars, I recognized the vessels. It was impressive to actually see all 7 boats of the Elgin fleet together. Impressive and terrifying. The Ampere was in the middle of the fleet and wasn't hard to pick out. It was the coolest boat I had ever seen, the kind of craft Austin would have cut out of his popular science magazine and pinned to his wall. What made it even more fascinating was knowing that Hatch was somewhere on that ship. I just wished that I could throw a massive lightning ball and blow the ship and Hatch off the planet. "So that's the Ampere," I said.
"Si," Jaime said.
"I told you it was cool," McKenna said.
"The space shuttle is cool," Austin said. "That thing is freaking epic."
"And we're going to sink it," I said. "It's kind of sad in a way. Like blowing up a cathedral."
"More like a house of horrors," McKenna said.
"They are docked close together for protection," Jaime said. "You can see the guards have blocked off the entire shoreline."
Austin grimaced.
"If we scuba dived in, we'd have to swim at least a half mile underwater."
He was the only one of us who had actually scuba dived, and that was during a highly supervised excursion on a family trip to Hawaii.
"That won't be easy."
"What part of any of this is easy?" Jack said.
"I'm just saying it's going to add at least an hour getting there, and we'll all be exhausted when we do. And by the time we blow the ship and get back to shore, the place will be crawling with military. How will we come ashore?"
"We'll have to set a longer delay on the explosives timer," I said.
"Which gives them more of a chance to find it," Jaime said.
"And where do we put the scuba tanks while we climb the boat?"
McKenna asked. None of us had an answer. I looked back out over the fleet.
"What are those boats out there?
The little ones behind the fleet?"
"Fishing boats," Jaime said.
"They're close to the ships," I said. McKenna had the binoculars and was looking out at the boats.
"That one's not even 100 feet from the Ampere," she said.
"They don't suspect them," Austin said.
Jaime smiled.
"I think we just found our way to the Ampere."
Chapter 35. Time. Dodds and Jaime came over the next day around noon. Both men looked anxious, but Dodds looked especially on edge.
"We've learned that the resupplying is moving faster than we anticipated," Dodds said. "They filed with the Port Authority to pull out Thursday afternoon."
"The day after tomorrow," Taylor said.
"That means we'll have to attack tomorrow night," Jack said.
Dodds nodded.
"We have the uniforms and cloaks, but no key. Apparently the sailors are not allowed to take them off the ship. We've secured scuba gear, but I understand you won't be using it."
"We think it will be better to use a fishing boat," I said. "We'll get close enough to raft over to the Ampere."
"I have already found a black raft," Jaime said.
"What about the explosives?" Jack asked.
"They're ready," Dodd said. "In a backpack with detonators and timers.
I'll go over the timers with all of you later.
No need, Jack said. I'll be carrying the explosives.
Dodd looked at him with an uncomfortable expression.
Just in case something happens to you, it would be best to have a backup.
Jack nodded.
You're right.
I have chartered the fishing boat, Jaime said. We will leave at 2:30 a.m. from the north end of the port.
Won't that look suspicious?
Austin asked.
A fishing boat at night?
No, Jaime said. Local fishing boats often return late at night.
There is one other factor to keep in mind, Dodd said. The weather. It's expected to rain. As long as it doesn't hamper Michael's climbing, it could be to our advantage.
I've never climbed a wet surface, I said.
Kylie could do it, McKenna said.
How is the rain helpful?
Taylor asked.
Cloud cover, no moon, poorer visibility, Dodds replied. And less chance that someone will be taking a leisurely walk on the deck.
He looked around.
Anything else?
Did you arrange for me to talk to my mother? I asked.
Jaime and Dodds looked at each other.
I'm afraid that will not be possible, Dodd said.
Why?
I turned to Jaime.
You promised that I would be able to talk to her.
I'm sorry, Jaime said, but we have lost communication with the voice.
What?
You know that we were compromised, Dodd said. Things have taken another turn for the worse. 2 days ago, the Elgin discovered our agent on their boat. We must assume that they now know everything he knows about the voice, the resistance, everything he knew.
Then they know about our plans, Austin exclaimed.
Fortunately, we had not yet told him what we were planning to do, Dodd said. We were waiting until we knew our exact timing so we could warn him to leave the boat.
How did you learn this? I asked.
The voice contacted our associate in Bolivia, Jaime said. He drove through the night to tell us.
I looked around at my friends. So we're really alone, I said.
We always were,
Taylor said.
At least the day is perfect, Jack said.
Why do you say that?
Taylor asked.
Thursday is Wade's birthday.
Dodds looked around at us all.
We'll leave here at 1:45 a.m. Jaime and I will have everything prepared. I want you to stay up as late as you can tonight. Study the boat plans, party, just try to stay up until dawn. That way you'll sleep all day and be fresh and ready to go at night.
That shouldn't be too hard, Austin said. Staying up all night?
Why is that? I asked.
It might be our last night to live.
Chapter 36. A Change in Plans. Taylor and I lay on the front room couch talking until she fell asleep around 9 in the morning. About a half hour after that, I heard the garage door open. Jack walked into the front room. He was wet with sweat.
Michael,
he whispered. I got up without waking Taylor.
What's up?
He motioned for me to follow him out to the garage. After he'd shut the door behind me, he said,
The plan doesn't make sense.
You're telling me now? I said.
Better now than never.
What part doesn't make sense?
It doesn't take 5 people to plant an explosive. Just 1. If I could get on the boat, I'd do it myself. But I need your help to get on board.
He looked me in the eyes.
We don't need everyone else.
I wasn't sure how to answer. But we're a team.
That's no reason to risk their lives, Jack said.
Think about it. What do we need Austin for? We don't need his brains. The plan is already set. He'll just slow us down.
Do you think he can even climb the rope?
I didn't answer. We both knew he was right.
Or McKenna? Taylor might be helpful, but Is it really worth risking her life? Are you okay with that?
I frowned.
No.
I didn't think so. So here's the new plan. We turn off everyone's alarms, meet Jaime outside and tell him it's just the two of us. You get me on the boat, help me score a key, then once I'm inside, you get clear.
What if you're stopped on the way to the engine room?
I blow it.
I just looked at him.
You heard the man. If the bomb's inside, it's going to take the ship down.
I can't send you in there alone.
You're not. I'm sending myself in there alone. What's the difference? I'm going in there anyway.
I shook my head. I can't let you do this.
Look, remember in the Star Source plant when you stayed inside and locked the pipe so none of us could go back for you? What was that, huh? It was a calculated risk. You did what you felt was right under the circumstance. And because of it, you saved your mother and the rest of us. And you even got out yourself. And what about when Zeus blew the water pipe, knowing it would kill him? This is no different. All I'm asking is that you let me do the same thing.
I shook my head. Jack, I know you think that Wade's death was your fault.
This has nothing to do with Wade's death, he said. It has to do with your life and everyone else's. I'm expendable, dude.
No, you're not. Not to me.
I know, because you're my friend, and you're a good friend. So let me do this, Michael. Let me do this one good thing. You made that choice in the Star Source plant. Let me make that choice, too.
I looked down a moment, then said, I don't like it.
But you know I'm right, he said.
I breathed out slowly. Finally, I said, okay, we'll do it your way.
Thank you, Michael. It's the right thing.
I hope so, I said.
It is, Jack said. Semper Fi.
I just looked at him sadly. What he didn't know was that I had no intention of leaving him alone on the boat. Semper Fi, I said. Semper Fi. Chapter 37. You call this trust? A few minutes later, I crept into Austin's room. He and McKenna were asleep next to each other. I turned off their alarm. Then I went back out to the couch and lay down next to Taylor. I couldn't sleep. For nearly an hour, I just looked at her. My heart ached. I didn't regret agreeing to Jack's plan. I would never regret saving Taylor's life. I just knew how slim the chances were that I would see her again. My world had changed in the last year in no small part due to Taylor. Having someone care about me and believe in me like she did was as much a power as my electricity was. I thought of writing her a note, but I really didn't know where to begin. Instead, I just cuddled up next to her. It was probably close to noon when I fell asleep. Jack woke me. It was dark again. I looked up and he put his finger over his mouth. I lifted Taylor's arm from me, then slowly rolled off the couch to my knees. I paused to look at her one last time. I wondered if I would ever see that beautiful face again. I pushed the thought from my mind. At least I can guarantee that she will see her home again, I told myself. The villa was dark and quiet as I walked out the front door and shut it behind me. Jack was leaning against the porch wall. It was overcast, as Dodds had said it might be, and there were no stars or moon visible.
What time is it? I asked.
1:30. They'll be here any minute.
He looked at me.
You ready?
As ready as I'll ever be. You?
I'm ready.
A few minutes later, the lights of the van appeared at the end of the driveway. Let's stop them before they get close enough to wake anybody, Jack said, walking toward the light. We met the van part way down the lane. Jaime was driving and he stopped the van next to us. Jack slid open the door, and we both got in.
Where's everyone else? Dodds asked.
It's just us, Jack said.
That's not the plan, Dodds said.
This is a better plan, I said. Two can do it. The others will just get in the way.
Everyone agreed to this? Dodds asked.
We don't have time to argue, Jack said. Let's go. Dodds looked upset, but relented.
All right. It's your plan. Let's go.
Jaime started to put the van into gear, then stopped. Dodds looked back at us.
Where's everyone else?
We just told you, Jack said. He squinted.
What are you talking about?
It's just the two of us, I said. Come on, let's go. Again, Jaime started to pull the van forward, then stopped. Dodds turned back.
Where's everyone else?
Jack scowled.
What the?
It's Taylor, I said. I looked out the window to see Taylor storming down the driveway. When she got to the van, she threw open the door.
Really? After all we talked about, you still tried to go without me?
I just...
Lied? Conspired?
He was just trying to protect you, Jack said.
You zip it, Taylor said. I already know this was your idea.
She spun back at me.
Really? This is trust?
I'm sorry I tried to leave you out. But I'm not sorry.
What is that supposed to mean?
It means he loves you, Jack said.
I said zip it, Taylor said.
It means I love you, I said.
And that's why we stay together. We're not just a couple, Michael. We're the Electro Clan, at least what's left of it. And that means we stick together through good and bad times. We've gotten this far because we've stuck together. I know you were trying to protect me, but I didn't ask to be protected. I asked to be with you.
I thought it was the right thing, I said.
I know, and part of me loves that you did this. But the right thing is us working together. All of us.
She turned to Jack.
And that means you too. You don't have to prove you're a hero. You've proven that so many times I've lost count. We all admire and love you just like Wade did. Don't take that away from us. Please.
Jack looked stunned. Then his eyes welled up with tears. All right, I said. Let's go wake Austin and McKenna. Chapter 38 1717 None of us told Austin and McKenna that we'd tried to leave them behind, and Austin spent half the drive trying to figure out why his alarm clock hadn't gone off. After just 20 minutes, the van pulled off the coastal highway and headed down a long sloped road toward the wide, dark bay. As we neared the water, the ship seemed to grow in their immensity, rising before us like great floating mountains. There were lights on the Elgen boats and loading dock, assuring us that they weren't asleep. As Jaime drove, Dodds turned around to face us. He held up a square, plastic object with a keypad and a digital screen.
This is the explosives timer. It connects to the detonator in the pack. Once you punch in the code, the explosive is activated and cannot be turned off.
What's the code? I asked.
1717.
Just like the radio frequency, I said.
Remember, once you punch in the code, it cannot be turned off. So do not activate it until you are ready to commit. To set the timer, you can either punch in the number of minutes on the keypad, or simply push this black button. Each time you push it, it will advance the timer 1 minute. up to 2 hours. Like the activation button, once it is set, it cannot be changed. So be sure to give yourself plenty of time to get off the boat. But remember, the more time you allow, the more time they have to find the bomb and dispose of it. He handed me a small black tube similar to the one Jaime used to set off his gun sentry. As you leave the boat, push this button. It will alert us that you are on your way. The raft you will be using has a motor, but do not use it until you are leaving, otherwise they'll hear you. After you're off the ship, head straight out to the open sea. We will be watching for you with night vision binoculars, and we'll pick you up in a speedboat. Any questions so far? Austin asked.
Can the detonators be set off by impact or heat?
It would have to be intense heat, he said. Like an open fire. Why?
Just in case the timer malfunctions, Austin said.
That won't be a problem, Dodd said. He glanced out the side window. Okay, we are just about there. When we reach the fishing boat, you'll change into your LGen uniforms, then cover them with the cloaks and stocking caps. You'll be completely concealed. I brought gloves for the three of you who glow. I don't know if you'll be able to use them as you climb, Michael. You'll just have to test them. When the boat passes behind the Ampere, we'll throw the raft out and stop the boat. Jack will climb in first so he can help the others on. You'll have just a few seconds to get into the raft. Then the boat will move on, leaving you behind. We'll come in as close to the Ampere's stern as we can, but you'll still probably have to paddle about 30 yards. As I said, the raft has a motor and will do about 10 knots, but do not use it until after you've set the bomb and gotten off the ship. Once you reach the Ampere, there are magnets to anchor the raft to the hull. They're very strong magnets, so when it's time to leave, don't try to pull them off. Just release or cut the line. Jack patted his knife.
Got it.
Remember, stay quiet, low, and covered. In this darkness, you'll be almost invisible. You know the rest of the plan. Don't forget to capture a key. I doubt they'll leave any doors unlocked. Any questions? None of us had any. Then good luck, and Godspeed, he said. Let's hope we catch Hatch sleeping.
Chapter 39. Fishing Impossible. 5 minutes later, Jaime stopped the van in front of a small lantern-lit shack with a hand-painted sign, Jorge's Charter Fishing Tours. In spite of the hour, an older man walked out of the building to greet us. He and Jaime spoke a bit in Spanish, then Jaime turned to us.
Everything is ready. Follow me.
All of us except Dodds walked past the shack and down a wood-planked dock to where an old fishing boat was moored. The boat was beige and turquoise. It had an upper platform enclosed in canvas, and its fishing lines were still in place. There was a black raft tied to the port side of the boat.
"Isn't that the wrong side for the raft?" Austin asked Jaime. "The Ampere is south of us."
"Yes, but we will first go far out to sea, then turn back and come in from the other direction, as if we are just returning from fishing. So we will pass the boat on the starboard side."
"Clever," Austin said.
We climbed on board and walked through the cabin to the open back of the boat. It smelled of salt water and fish. On the floor were canvas bags with our initials marked in pen.
"Your uniforms," Jaime said. "Get dressed."
We all put on the sailor uniforms, which fit perfectly.
"They did a good job," Taylor said. "We look like LGen sailors."
Then she added,
"Actually, I've never seen one."
Jaime said,
"Put on the cloaks."
I pulled the cloak from the bottom of the bag and slid my arms through it. The fabric was black and lightweight, like vinyl, though softer and more opaque. I looked up at everyone else. We looked like we were wearing Halloween witch costumes.
"Michael, check this out," Austin said, leaning over the back of the boat.
I walked back to see what he was looking at. Painted on the boat's stern was the name Fishin' Impossible. "Doesn't exactly inspire confidence," I said. Dodds walked up to the side of the boat carrying a large black vinyl backpack. "Jack," he said.
"Yes, sir,"
Jack said.
"Your explosives," Dodds said, handing the pack over the side of the boat.
"How sensitive are they?" Jack asked.
"These are pretty stable," he said. "But don't push your luck."
Jack slid the pack over his shoulders just to get a sense of its weight.
"About 50 pounds, he said. "No problem."
He set the pack on the ground and unzipped the top flap, exposing the detonator. The digital screen glowed light green.
"What's the code?" Dodds quizzed.
1717, Jack replied.
He looked up.
"That's how old Wade would be today."
The boat's engine started, and the air smelled of gasoline and exhaust as the propeller churned and gurgled beneath us.
"It is time to go," Jaime said.
He began untying the rope holding us to the dock.
"Aren't you coming?" I asked Dodds, who was still on the dock.
"No. We can't put all our eggs in one basket, and I believe I am close to re-establishing radio contact with the Resistance."
He pushed the boat away from the dock with his foot.
"But I will see you all shortly."
For just a moment, his words hung in the air like a promise. The fishing boat sputtered in its own veil of exhaust as it slowly pulled away from the dock. Then it rotated until we were facing the sea. The old man pushed down on the throttle, and we lurched forward, headed out into the cold darkness.
Chapter 40. The Shadow of the Ampere. It started raining as the old boat chugged out to sea. Taylor slid up next to me and took my hand in hers.
"I'm cold," she said.
I put my arm around her.
"You know, when we attacked the Star Source plant, we weren't together," she said. "This time we're together."
I looked at her. "Our first date," I said. She grinned. "Are you scared?" I asked.
"Terrified."
"Me too."
"Do you think we'll make it back?"
"Of course we will."
"Really?"
"I can't afford to doubt," I said. "My mom used to say that faith and fear can't exist simultaneously in the mind, any more than light and dark can't exist simultaneously in the same room."
"Your mom is smart."
"I know. I wished I could have spoken to her once more." I stopped myself. Taylor squeezed my hand.
"You'll get the chance," she said.
A moment later, Taylor looked over at Jack.
"How are you feeling?"
"Wet," he said.
Suddenly, the whining of the engine stopped, and the boat slowed and pitched forward until the surging of the waves almost rocked us out of our seats. Jaime came out of the cab with a large coil of black rope over his shoulder.
"We are turning back now. It is time to put on your masks and gloves."
As we donned our coverings, Jaime walked over and inspected the ropes on the raft, then turned back to us.
"Remember, you must go fast. Jack first, then Taylor, Michael, Austin, and McKenna. When you are all in, I will hand down the pack and rope. If we get near the boat and are discovered, we will about."
"About?" Taylor said.
"I think he means abort," I said. Jaime went back to the cabin. The boat turned around and headed back toward the lights of the shore. I stood and walked up to the front of the boat,
Jaime.
See, Mr. Michael. I need to ask you a favor. He looked at me seriously. Anything. If we don't make it, I want you to tell my mother what we were trying to do.
See, of course.
Also Austin's and Taylor's families. Taylor's family doesn't even know she's electric.
You will come back, Mr. Michael. But if something happens, I promise that they will know the truth.
Thank you, I said.
You will come back, he said again.
When I returned to my seat, the Elgen fleet was in view. The Ampere was sandwiched in between the Watt and the Volta. Fortunately, the Faraday, the biggest boat of the Elgen fleet, was on the far north side of the fleet. It stuck so far out into the bay that had it been next to the Ampere, we never would have been able to get close. No one spoke. Jaime came back with us, looking at the fleet through his binoculars. The fishing boat made a wide elliptical sweep of the bay, then drifted in toward the shore, carefully edging itself closer to the fleet. The first of the Elgen boats we passed was the Ohm, which in spite of the hour had all its lights on as men and forklifts scurried on its deck, filling it with supplies. The next boat was the Tesla, then the Jewel, which was completely dark and stranger looking than I had imagined. Next we reached the powerhouse of the fleet, the Watt. The battle cruiser was gunship gray with large cannons pointing out toward the sea behind her. Our boat slowed still more as we crossed beneath the shadow of the cruiser toward the Ampere. I turned back and looked up at the boats, wondering if we were being watched. All I could see were a few cabin lights and darkness. Jaime put down his binoculars, then moved over to the raft and waved to Jack to come help him. They quickly unlashed the raft, laying it flat at our feet on the floor of the boat. When we were in the shadow of the Ampere, the engine cut back even more, then slowed as the captain put the boat in idle.
Now, Jaime said.
The rest of us stood as Jaime and Jack heaved the raft over the port side, leaving just the front tow rope attached. Jack jumped over the side, disappearing from our view. Jaime handed over two paddles, then turned to us.
Rapidamente.
Taylor climbed over first, helped down into the raft by Jack, followed by me, Austin, then finally McKenna, who I hadn't heard speak since we'd boarded.
Mr. Michael, Jaime said.
He tossed me the coil of black rope, then handed the explosives to Jack. Then he pulled out a knife and cut our tow rope.
Buena suerte, amigos. Go with God.
The boat shifted back into gear and was soon clear of us, leaving us alone and exposed near the Ampere's massive stern.
Paddle, Jack said.
He took one paddle and handed me the other, and we paddled our way toward the boat until her stern rose above us like a great canyon wall.
Get the magnets ready, I said to Austin.
Austin lifted one magnet, then handed the other to McKenna. The magnets were fist size and round with a small loop through the back where a strap ran through them, connecting them to the raft. The strap was about 6 feet long, but was designed to be cinched tight, to snug the raft up against the boat. When we were 20 feet out, I set down my paddle and reached out toward the boat, and magnified. My magnetism was stronger than I thought it would be, and our raft was drawn so quickly to the hull that we hit against the Ampere hard enough that I almost flipped the raft over.
Sorry,
I whispered. Austin and McKenna stuck their magnets against the hull, which connected with an uncomfortably loud clang, then pulled the straps until the raft was tight against the boat.
My turn, I said.
Taylor leaned forward and kissed me, gently cupping my cheeks in her hands.
Be careful.
I'll see you soon. I slid the rope coil over my head and one shoulder, then awkwardly stood in the leaning raft, putting my hands against the side and magnifying. The hole was cold and wet, but easy to grab, as if the water actually enhanced my magnetism.
"Watch for the rope,"
I said. I threw my knees against the hole and began to climb. With all the adrenaline pumping through my body, I reached the top in less than 10 minutes. As I got near the railing of the deck, I stopped and listened for guards. I didn't hear anything but the patter of rain, so I crept up a little farther so I could peer over the side. There was no one. I spotted a camera mounted high up on the wall facing down toward me. The camera appeared stationary, but the red light on top of the camera indicated that it was active. I wished Zeus was there to blow it out, and it occurred to me that I could take it out just as well. Throwing lightning balls was too risky, as a flash of lightning would almost certainly catch a guard's eye. I could climb the wall beneath it and short it out. I just needed a little luck coming over the side railing. But first, I needed to get rid of the rope. I magnetized the lower half of my body, then took the end of the rope and tied it around the deck's outside railing with the figure 8 knot. I looked down. The raft was completely invisible to me, and all I could see below was an occasional white cap in the sea. I took the coil from around my neck and dropped it into the darkness below. The rope almost immediately tensed. Jack was on his way up. I clung to the side of the boat and waited.
Chapter 41. My Enemy's Enemy. It took Jack even less time to climb up than it had me. He was strong enough that he wasn't even using his legs, but swinging them back and forth as he grasped the rope hand over hand and pulled himself up. He stopped when he was next to me. He looked at me, clinging to the side of the boat.
"You look like a spider," he said. "I feel like one," I said.
He looked up.
"Anyone topside?"
"No,
but there's a camera." "Have you tried putting it out?"
"I was waiting for you," I said.
"Give me a second."
I climbed back up and peered over the side again, then, still wearing my cloak, flung myself over on top of the deck. Sidling up against the interior wall, I quickly stole beneath the camera, then climbed up, grabbed it, and pulsed. The red light on top of it went out. I leaned back over the rail.
"It's out."
"Good,"
he said.
"Taylor's on her way up."
I looked over the side.
"You can see her?"
"No, I can feel her on the rope."
He climbed the rest of the way up the rope, then grabbed the railing and pulled himself over.
"Let's pull her up,"
he said. We both grabbed the rope and began pulling. Taylor suddenly came into view. We lifted her all the way to the railing.
"Thanks,"
she said, panting. Jack grabbed onto her and pulled her up and over the side. Then we threw the rope back down. A minute later, we felt the rope tense. All three of us grabbed it and quickly pulled. McKenna practically flew up. When she was a few feet from the railing, Jack grabbed her and pulled her over as well. Then we tossed the rope back down.
"Austin knows to tie the pack to the rope, right?"
Jack nodded.
"I reminded him."
We felt the rope tense, and we quickly pulled. The rope was so light that it almost felt like there wasn't anything on it.
"I see the pack,"
McKenna said. We quickly pulled the explosives up and over the side. Jack untied the pack and threw the rope back over. It was nearly a minute before we felt it tense.
"Let's pull,"
I said. With all four of us pulling, we lifted Austin up in just 5 minutes. When he got to the top, he looked pale and terrified, and he grabbed onto the railing as if for his life. Jack and I each grabbed one of his arms.